Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Are your wiper blades chattering, skipping, or squeaking? Don't let streaks or smearing on your windshield compromise your visibility. When it's time to replace your wiper blades, stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts and see our selection. Our professional parts people will even install your new wiper blades while you wait. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store, or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years, and not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured. Not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
Hey, I'm Tyler.
And I'm KC.
And you're listening to
The Element Podcast.
What's happening, all my woods people? This is the Element Podcast brought to you by First Light. And my voice sounds really good today because I yelled at football practice.
You're
a bunch
a little
last
rasp.
Night. I like it, you know? I've had that just like that depth, man, that comes from the diaphragm, you know?
Sound like our buddy Brent Reeves a little bit.
Yeah.
You know? You actually impersonated him earlier and it sounded pretty nice.
I can do it, man, if I just yell a little bit. So we've been doing football practice, and by the way, it's the hottest year ever. It's 105 degrees, right, every day pretty much here. And dusty. We haven't had rain in like a month. Conditions on the range are pretty rough right now. But that's why football players are good from Texas. That are from Texas.
That's right, man.
They grow up in the hot, dusty.
One of many reasons.
Stuff, you know?
Right now, in like at least in the UIL stuff, though, they're requiring them to cancel practice if the surface is such temperature or whatever. So I feel like those kids are just going to die on Friday nights instead of in practice. So
I'm
it's
not
kinda
sure. Yeah. Yeah, I'm not sure if you know this, but I think society's getting softer.
I think they're getting a little soft, yeah. Not to be the tough old boys. There is, like, some level of, like, safety that is good,
yeah.
You know, but, like,
I know it happens, and there's some things that happen, you know, to people. It is sad.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, nobody's forcing them to play football. They're wanting to play, right? And, you know, it's just one of those things that it could happen to anybody, right?
Yeah.
You just never know.
Honestly, I just feel like it's swinging too far.
Yeah.
If, this is a deer hunting podcast, by the way, but if you, if you don't train to perform to do the task that you are scheduled to do, when it gets to time for the task, you're not going to be good at it. You're going to fail, which rolls us right into what we're going to talk about
there
today.
You
golly,
go.
Dude.
Man, and it ain't even deer hunting, is it?
No, it ain't even. No, we're talking about deer hunting. We're talking about deer hunting a little bit.
Deer hunting podcast, but we're talking about other things.
So it's hot right now. And we decided, if you listen to the last podcast, we were on location in New Mexico. Hunting Nuevo Mexico.
Nuevo, huh?
We were hunting antelope and having a tough time. And we're going to talk a little bit more in detail about like some of the setups that we were using, some of our application, and some of the things we might change, and then what that looks like going forward this deer season if maybe some of our antelope experiences change the way we think about archery setups or approach or whatever the thought may be, you know, because really one of the things that you as a hunter should be doing every time you go hunting is to take what you learn and apply it to the next go around. If you're not doing that, then you're missing out because it's going to help you kill deer or antelope or whatever else, right? You got a factoid over there.
Yeah. The pronghorn antelope, according to Google, this is as a result of a little over 500,000 results on Google, can run 61 miles per hour. I've heard it said that it's the fastest land animal on Earth. I've heard it say it's the second fastest animal on Earth.
Fastest in North America for sure.
Right here it says second fastest land animal in the world. And then it says cheetah, 61 miles an hour. So I'm not sure if it's like 61.1.
Dude, throughout my life, I've heard a lot of different numbers for the cheetah speed.
I have too.
Like right there, it says cheetah's 50 to 80. I've heard 80. I've even heard 100 on cheetahs, and I never would believe
There's
that.
There's no way, dude.
Yeah. Like, their paw might be moving 100 miles an hour.
Yeah.
You know, but Nolan Ryan can move his paw faster than that, and he's 65. So, or however old he is. They ever looked any of that stuff? Like, it. The way they radar gun pitches and stuff.
Yeah, they like try to like actualize his speed.
Yeah, he's throwing like 106, 107 or something like that.
I heard 108.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm booking it.
Because the way they gun pitchers today is different than the way they gunned them back then. And it's actually like if they were gunning them like it was today, it would be like 108.
Yeah,
they said.
Chapman wouldn't have nothing on him.
Dang, dude. Come on, dude.
And
Texas Rangers, bro.
With all that. No, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah. He's a Texas Ranger. Don't be dissing him, dude.
No, I'm not. I'm saying Chapman, or Aroldis Chapman, any other really fast pitcher.
Ranger.
Ain't got nothing on.
He's a Ranger.
He's a Ranger
now? Pretty sure. Is he not? Let's look this up. Brian, do you know about that? Are you a baseball player?
Eric would know.
Yeah, if too bad he's not up
here.
I
thought he was a Mets guy or something.
Texas Rangers. Look at that.
Oh, never mind. Sorry. Yep. Those are all Rangers.
Yeah.
I didn't realize he was a pitcher for the Rangers. How about that?
Yep.
Anyways, neither one of those guys could hit an antelope with a baseball. So even though they only run 60, they are the fastest things alive.
They are.
Uh-huh. So Tyler and I went to New Mexico with two fairly different setups. And we both have reasoning for that. I'll explain my setup as to what I hunted antelope with, and then you go ahead after that. I have a SR-350, which is a real fast bow, and I have a fairly heavy arrow for that, 137 grains, I believe, is what it ends up being, total arrow weight. And I was shooting a big three-blade mechanical because antelope are fairly small animals, and you're not going to have any problem getting that thing through them, especially with the heavier arrow. So I felt really good about my setup because I can hold those arrows in a really, really tight group, even at very long distance. So I liked the way I was shooting that bow before I left. I also have a setup for really light arrows that I didn't shoot quite as well. And I was like, I'm just going to take this one because I can just hit tacks at like 60 with this thing. So that was my plan. I headed out there. Tyler, what was your arrow setup?
I had, my arrows were 430 grain arrows with 100 grain tip.
So total arrow weight, 430.
Yep.
Yeah. And do you know what speed that was shooting?
I don't. I'm trying to figure out if I can do it. If there's like a arrow,
speed
calculator.
There he is, but it might be hard to find.
I'm going to try to calculate the speed for you here real quick.
Okay. So I'm shooting at like 261, I think, is my arrow speed with my setup. And then Tyler's going to put his in here.
One arrow rate. Arrow weight's 430. Just with no additional string rate.
It's going to be a little bit off.
That's not true. Cannot be.
I think yours was like 303 or something.
I think
like that.
I don't think it was that fast. I think 303 was the fastest we could get that thing.
I thought like we got it to like 327 or something.
No,
like that.
We got it to 303 was, I think, the fastest we could get it with like a super light arrow. Mm-hmm. I would imagine it was in the upper 290s or something like that, maybe. Mid 290s. So, yeah. But you may be right. I feel like that was like as fast as we could get it so that, because isn't there, there's a picture we have that says 303 on the
thumbnail?
Yeah, we used a light arrow.
Let's see.
In that. So anyway, that I would assume I'm shooting like, I don't know, 295, because I can shoot another 70 grains. I could shoot 282.
We got that one at 345, that super light one.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it was 303.
We should have shot that.
So Yeah, for real.
85
dude.
Grains.
Tell you what.
Smoke them.
Oh, that is what we did, mm-hmm. isn't it? Yep, that's right.
It was like a 350 grain total air weight or something yeah. like that.
So I'm probably shooting like 303, like Casey said. So quite a bit faster than what he's shooting. And I shoot also like another inch, I think, draw, right?
Mm-hmm. Or half, I think.
Half inch.
Yeah. So you shoot a pretty fast setup.
Yeah, it's pretty fast. It's SR350 too. Mm-hmm. That's what I've been shooting, which I think I'm going to go away from that this year going forward.
Spooky.
But anyway, that was my setup.
Mm-hmm. And how do you feel about your setup? Let's lay it on the table here. We took some shots at Antelope, right?
Yeah.
And
we did.
How do you feel about how your setup performed while taking shots at Antelope?
I don't know. My setup was fine, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah. I mean, it's hard to say. I can't place any blame on my setup, I don't think.
What do you think went wrong, if something went wrong, and if you missed an antelope?
I missed two antelope.
Okay.
And I think the main issue is getting an accurate range more mm-hmm. than anything.
What caused you range issues?
The fact that you've been to Antarctica, probably not. If you were to stick your head up above the snow,
that
penguin would see you from a long ways,
long
right?
ways off.
That's what I felt like I was doing out there. It was like Antarctica, but I don't know, 100 degrees hotter. And
maybe more than that.
Maybe more. And it was like every time you set up, you got seen if you set up high enough to range. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to range between grass and you're hitting grass. That's the whole issue with ground hunting in the whitetail. You know, we've talked about it a bunch. We don't love whitetail hunting on the ground. We do it some because it's kind of what gives us a chance. But at the end of the day, it just is so hard to get a range without getting caught. That's clear and unobstructed. And so you just don't know if you're hitting a piece of grass that's 5 yards in front of that thing or 10 yards behind it or whatever a lot of times. And then at that point, if you've been seen, then it's like, oh, well, he's looking at me. I get drawn. Now, based off of what we might have seen previous, these things are going to jump the string bad. So I shoot low. Every once in a while, they wouldn't jump the string.
Dude, it's like half the time, I think.
They're the weirdest things ever, dude.
Mm-hmm.
But they're going to jump the string a lot. And I think you add, you know, for you, you know, I'll let you talk about it more, but like you kind of progressively made your way down until all of a sudden you were surprised that wasn't happening. But
yeah.
It's like, I decided basically, my second shot, I decided I'm shooting way low because we have footage of these shots and these things are jumping the string, like no doubt. And so I go to shoot low, and here's what happened. I'll just tell the story of what happened real quick. Essentially, we had like a pattern going. So we go in the morning, and there's a cedar tree or a few cedar trees we can kind of sit in and hope these things come right back by us the next day. I'd already had this group at 59 yards, but I couldn't, long story short, I couldn't get them accurately ranged confidently. I had a 59-yard range amongst about 20 that were in the 18 to 21-yard range or so. So I was just hitting a bunch of grass, you know what I mean, and struggling to get ranges. I hit a 59 as the antelope was facing away, and I just didn't feel confident, so I didn't take the shot. They went past the cedar trees. The next morning, we go down there, get in the cedar trees. As soon as it's getting light, I see them. They get to 90 and mill around. These three bucks mill around for a while, and I see one come out the other side of the drainage pretty close. By the time I had seen him, it was too late. He was going like behind this little hill at probably 60 yards or so. So I was like, okay, we're standing still. I told Michael he was there. These three are just milling around for like 15 minutes. And then all of a sudden they just get on their horse and start walking fast through the draw and back up to the side. By the time I can get them ranged in my gap, all three of them are like fairly broadside. At 55, I ranged the closest one at 55. And they, there's another tree. So they get kind of through my gap. When they get to the other tree, I draw my bow thinking, you know, I probably need to do it now so I can get a shot. Otherwise, they're just going to get behind this thing. And I'm thinking I'm going to get caught. Well, I draw, and the closest one, like that's still broadside for some time, he kind of just looks over because I think my release or something made some noise. And so he looks over, but almost didn't even stop. He just like kind of continues walking. He's like stutters for a second and then keeps walking. And I'm like, please stop. Like, surely they're going to feed, right? They're going to stop. Right? They've been feeding for 15 minutes in the same spot at 90 yards. He doesn't stop. Well, the other two do stop, but they're like kind of getting over the ridge on the backside. And I'm still thinking 55 because I thought they were coming in a line. But and just, you know, all this happened so fast. Mm-hmm. But then, so I'm thinking 55. And so I'm shooting my 50-yard pin, and I'm thinking low, too, because they're jumping the string really bad so far. And essentially, I'm following that guy. He goes behind the hill and never stops. So I tell Michael, I'm like, middle one. And I'm, like, thinking about which one do I shoot here. He's kind of facing me a little bit, middle one. And I hold below his chest, basically, like, in the grass as he's going over the hill. It's going to lob up over, right? And I shoot. And it looks like money. I mean, it's going just dead nuts where I want it to. It's going straight at his chest, man. And it gets kind of over the hill, and I can't see it. And, I mean, I didn't hear it hit. So I don't know what happened. The footage is the same way from the same perspective. Like, we have the arrow flight all the way till it kind of goes behind the grass that's kind of on top of the hill and sinks to him. And I mean, I just can't, like, I can see most of his chest in my mind's eye, and I can see it going right there. And the only thing I can think is I held 50 below his chest. He was actually at 60, probably, and I was thinking 55. And we were in the shadows, and the sun was in their eyes. I don't think they knew we were there.
No, I don't think so.
I think they heard a weird noise and were just like, ah, what's that? And then they were fixing to just go back to feeding or whatever. And so I don't think they jumped a string, and so I just had no help. I think I just shot under them. I'm pretty sure that's what happened. So I never found my arrow or anything, but, I mean, I knew immediately that there was no hit. So that was actually my last shot. My other shot was a very similar situation where the antelope knew I was there. They pretty much know you're there almost every time you shoot at them. And just I ended up getting ducked in that situation. So
I'm not going to tell people how many times I shot because it's going to remain a mystery until you watch the video. But it was more than Tyler is what I shot. I had a few more opportunities, and I also like tried some follow up shots and different things that were just to no avail. It's kind of dumb, but
you were on the stalking game, dude. Yeah. You were doing it, man.
I kind of doing it. If doing it means like spooking them, I was doing that.
You're getting the, shots.
The
you're
getting conservative shots, play. Here's the problem: is like I we both are like just. The way we are is fairly conservative individuals, but in this situation, I was pushing it a little bit more than you were because you kind of had like a good spot that you knew would work if you let it do its thing. I was just like, well, I know where some antelope are, and there's not really a great spot, so I'm just going to try to go stalk them, which produces shots. However, we don't have any conclusion as to which one works better at this point in time. So I don't know, but the first day, I did get a shot at an antelope, and I was like, oh, I'm going to kill these things because I got a shot at 50 yards. It was a couple antelope in a group, and they acted like kind of weird. They like got curious about what we were after we spooked them trying to stalk, so they ran up to us. And again, I was having a hard time getting a precise yardage because I would click. You know, I had my hand on my riser, right, and I had my rangefinder right here, click, and I go to loop on, and they'd move. Like, they just constantly, they're almost like a trout in the water. Like, they're just constantly moving around. You know, they're hardly ever just, like, in one spot. So, they just, like, are very fluid in what they do, especially when there's a group, right? When there's one, they'll just kind of stand up and look at you. But they usually stand up, like, 80 or 90 yards away. So, you don't really get an opportunity at those. Yeah. But, like, the group, it seems as if sometimes you get a better opportunity in groups than you do singles. But it's tough. Either way, I got a shot there, and I thought that my sight was on 51, and it ends up I had it set to 53. You know, I have a rolling sight. I have a double vertical pin, and my top sight was set to 53. I knew I needed to aim low because I thought the animals were around 50, so I aimed a little low, and it ends up I missed, like, probably an inch over the back. I mean, it was so close, and in retrospect, the mistake was that I didn't aim low enough for what my pin was set to, because you just cannot adjust that pin fast enough. But at the same time, if you don't have an adjustable sight, you just have usually 20, 30, 40, right? Like, you're going to have to pin gap anyways. By the way, if you're going antelope hunting, you got to have at least a 50. Otherwise, you're not going to get shots.
unless you're sitting water in a blind. And yeah. This is something we probably should talk about, is like, we didn't want that situation, really. We wanted to stalk these things. I don't even sit all day for a big whitetail. Like, I'm not gonna sit for a long time for a pronghorn.
I would have done it, but we didn't really see them like conclusively hitting water, like
the
often.
Ranch there at the house.
Where?
That pond.
Well, were they actually drinking water, or were they just eating the grass
every day
behind it?
I don't know. They were there every day, though.
I think they were just eating the grass behind it. So, like, I never saw an antelope put lip to water the whole time we were on
the
trip.
I guess I'm not saying necessarily water, but sitting something that they're going to do consistently in a blind. You could get closer than 50 in that situation. I didn't want to sit in a blind, period. And so
we didn't really have one.
Yeah, we didn't bring one.
I brought a ghost blind.
Yeah.
Which we used, and it was pretty effective.
Yeah.
But
I bet there was one around, but we didn't bring one.
Yeah. Talk about a good way to get cooked.
That's another reason. I just didn't want to do it. Like, I mean, the shade would have been great, but at the same time, you're not getting much wind. So it's kind of like what they say, 6 one way, half dozen the other, you know. It's like
J.O. said 10 one way, half dozen the other one time.
10.
While we're out there.
10, huh?
It's like, I mean, I'm sure it's just the way he's heard it, but I was like, that doesn't actually convey the thought you're trying to make it convey. Unless I misunderstood him, I might have, but that's what I thought he said. I was like, that's kind of weird.
Yeah.
I might start saying it just to mess with people. That's probably what he's doing to me, man.
Probably right, man. Just messing with you.
I guarantee you.
But I wasn't trying to cut you off. I was just trying to make the point that, like, you could get shots under 50 if you hunted in a stationary spot.
I think, too.
But spot and stalk, man, it's, like, almost impossible to do that, I feel like.
Yeah. There's a few little places that you might have, could have. And I...
Also different. There's going to be, like, different country that has, like, sage and stuff. But this, we had no sage at all. I mean, it's just, like, a foot of grass.
Doing good.
Yeah.
Some of the grass is pretty tall. And, like, when I say that, I mean, like, 14, 15 inches, so you could belly crawl and be hidden.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of it was 7 or 8 inches tall.
Yeah.
And you
might have some elevation, but then you get to 150 yards, you're like, I can't do anything at this point.
Oh, dude, I had bloody knees, and it was terrible. I did fit fine. Like, we did a stalk one time I didn't get a shot on. I was trying to actually get within 50, and I thought I could do it. I had a yucca that was going to be, like, 45 yards from the antelope, and I was like, he's dead. Well, I was like 3 yards from the yucca. He stands up and runs off, right? But we belly crawled.
Is he a long buck?
Yeah. Mm, they just do it. They just stand up.
They do. Mm-hmm. That's another thing. If you're stalking a lone buck, it is completely a different deal than stalking a group of them, because mm-hmm. they just completely, like, wash out and don't think about anything when they have other guys watching for them or other girls watching for them. But when they're by themselves, they are freaked out.
Yeah. Yeah.
O'Reilly Auto Parts are in the business of keeping your car on the road. O'Reilly Auto Parts offer friendly, helpful service and the parts knowledge you need for all your maintenance and repairs. If you're confused about what part you need, like what wipers are going to be the best, what replacement headlights are going to be the best, go into O'Reilly and talk to the people that work there, because they're great and they're super friendly, and they'll get you squared away where you walk out knowing you got the right thing. They've got thousands of parts and accessories in stock, either in-store or online, so you never have to worry if you're in a jam. Do you need your windshield wipers replaced? You need a brake light fixed? You need some quick service? They'll help you find the right part or point you to the nearest local repair shop for help. The professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts are your one-stop shop for all things auto do-it-yourself, and you can find what you need in-store or online. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at O'ReillyAuto.com/meateater. That's O'ReillyAuto.com/meateater. There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store, or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today. You ever get that feeling you're stuck inside staring at screens and a primal urge kicks in? You crave wide open spaces, fresh air, the chance to connect with the land. Well, maybe it's time to find your own piece of the wild, but searching for property can be a maze. That's where land.com comes in. They got millions of listings across the country, from mountain ranches to hidden fishing holes. Their search tools are like a seasoned guide helping you narrow down what you want. Land.com isn't just about buying and selling. It's about finding a place to hunt, fish, explore, or simply sit by a campfire and listen to the crickets. So head over to land.com today to turn one day into today, because trust me, there's nothing quite like the feeling of standing on your own piece of earth.
Yeah, they like have this thing where they just have an internal clock where they sit there for 20 minutes and they say, I haven't looked this way. And they look back or whatever. Like, they just know to check every direction. And then the inverse goes whenever you have the group, like you're talking about, to not to be mean about antelope. I'm just going to try to say this in a nicer way than how I really feel. They are not the brightest animals. They don't seem that way to me, at least. I think that whitetail are way smarter than antelope is, and elk too. But antelope have probably better eyesight than humans. I don't know.
I feel like too.
They pick, like, if you come over a ridge at a mile in your skyline, they will be looking at you.
I guarantee you. It's the wildest thing. Yeah. People have said this. I thought it was just a cliche. Mm-hmm. But I truly thought, well, they're going to be just like a whitetail. It's going to be, I mean, a whitetail can see great.
You can get away with some stuff.
You know, but you can get away with some stuff. But, like, they're going to be like a whitetail. They see great. They see people walking around looking like Sasquatches out there. But I legit think they see better than a whitetail, for sure.
I don't know. A lot of this stuff might be Hollywood, and it all goes back to, like, that T-Rex thing from Jurassic Park. But, like, I feel like it's the movement. Like, if something moves at all, they've got it. Now, there was times when I was, like, pretty close to some does and stuff, and if you're dead calm still, they kind of ignore you. But, you know, it makes sense, too. As a plains animal, things that are still don't really cause you a lot of issue because you can see for a long ways. So when something's moving towards you, like, they're going to pick it up.
Yeah.
Anyways, I feel as if antelope in a group do what the one that's doing something, the other ones follow it. And oftentimes the one that's doing something is not making the best choice.
Yeah.
It's actually the one that's kind of trying to die.
Yeah.
And maybe there's like a survival aspect to that of like, we're going to, you know, they're not thinking this way, but the way it works is like they keep the other one alive by also joining in with it and making up for what it lacks, you know, or whatever, which when you're hunting them actually plays into your hand pretty good. All that to say, if one of them's going to stop, the whole group's going to stop. If one of them, it's like blackbirds in the sky when they're doing that thing. What's it called? Do you remember that fancy name when they're like undulating or whatever and doing the blackbird cloud?
I don't know.
I'm glad you got your computer here.
Yeah,
let's just look blackbird swarm, see what it's called. But that's kind of how antelope operate. One of them takes off, they're all going to follow it. And if you see one go a direction you don't want it to, it's over. They're all going to fall. Even if they're not pointed that way right now. Every once in a while, that one will turn back. But usually, the whole group will go where that one goes.
Murmuration.
Not undulation, but murmuration. That's it. So that can play into your hand pretty good on a stalk. And it actually, a different stalk that I went on that I had a miss on was a buck that we were pretty familiar with. These things are kind of cool. They're super cool. They have like a range, kind of like whitetail do. But it's much more identifiable by physical like land features, right? Where there'll be like this little valley that's where that buck lives. And some days he'll have does with him, some days he won't. And, or like, there'll be like a fenced pasture, you know, a pasture out there is like a compartment. And there'll be 3 bucks that live in that compartment, and they might leave every once in a while, but for the most part, you're going to see them almost every day in that compartment. Getting close to him is hard. But we had one that we were real familiar with. We called him Heart Shape, which is kind of like a little bit of a joke because they kind of tend to have a heart-shaped type rat.
All of them.
But he really did. He hooked in real hard, and he was
Real tight, narrow, and heavy.
He's pretty. Yeah. And first antelope we saw, I think, on the trip, we were driving in the day before the season and saw him like in the road ditch, and we were like, oh, we're about to kill him.
Yeah. Oh, it's easy, man.
And well, little do you know, when the truck stops, they run away. It's funny how it works. Like two-thirds of the way through the hunt, I actually got an opportunity at Heart Shape. We were both kind of trying to make moves and ambush this guy. I was kind of out in the middle, and you were kind of on an escape route that we knew they used often, and they ended up busting kind of up above me up the hill, and I had like a wash to walk in. It was actually really awesome. It's not even like a creek bottom. It's like a big old deep wash where it just made a gully. And you could walk around it and they were undetected. And we snuck up to a spot and they fed around. So like they ran like 300 yards up after they got spooked and just went to feeding again because one of them wanted to eat. So they're like, oh, okay, I guess we can eat, you know. And this buck worked to 61 yards, which I was like, I've got this so good. And he was quartering to me and I drew back. He looked at his does because they were looking at me, which I was like, oh, he's going to be pretty calm. He's not even looking at me, you know. And I aimed kind of low, aimed like right at the bottom of his chest, thinking he was going to dip out, and I was just going to hammer him. Well, he came out of his skin and wasn't there when my arrow got there. You know, like,
they're so fast.
Absolutely just, I mean, he literally, you can look at it in the footage, he was like 2 foot to the right of my arrow, and my arrow's tracking good until he freaks out. And I think it goes back to their seeing. They're not hearing the bow. They're seeing it go off. They're seeing the arrow in the air or something. They have a really good reaction time on that stuff.
That's another thing. They are not just straightaway speed fast. Mm-hmm. They are quick fast. Yeah. Like,
they're with it.
It would blow my mind, actually, how fast they could pretty much get to top speed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like their acceleration is so fast. Mm-hmm. I couldn't believe it,
and
really,
it is weird, too, because you know how, like, sprinters get down into the stance to accelerate? Like, pronghorn don't, like, dip down to fast. They just are there.
Yeah,
they're just
going. They get going.
And they also, like, are gyroscopic when they run.
Yeah.
If you watch antelope run across the prairie, their heads do not move. Their bodies don't move. And their legs are, like, absorbing all the terrain changes. They're cool, man.
Yeah, they are
but
cool, man.
I tell that story to tell the story. I can't remember. Oh, later on in the hunt, I have a very similar situation. Stalk up on a buck with a bunch of does. This is right at last light. Again, they don't see very good in the lower light stuff or when the sun is behind you. So you get away with a lot more stuff then. Long story short, I stalk up in this with this buck and this does. He ends up kind of looping out around him. I don't have a good shot. I don't have a good range. It's like 75, and he's kind of behind some stuff. I'm like, no, I'm not taking that shot. He spooks off. I give him a whole bunch of, which is like the way to challenge him or something. I don't know. We were kind of operating on the fly with the calling, but
it's like
that's
spook indoor and challenge at
right.
the same time.
It's like a, hey, look at me. You know, it's kind of pretty much what it is. Well, with that, the does all hooked back around and ran back to me because they were interested in what I had been saying, I guess. But he runs up. And then kind of loops back out, and I get another good range on him at 61 again. 61 was like a funny spot for me. I dial my
happens
pin.
Happens to be the miles per hour.
That's right.
They can run.
That's funny. I roll my pin to the right spot, draw back, and he is quartering to, but at a different angle. He's quartering to, I guess you'd say, the left. So I'm like, okay, he's going to wheel out, as they do, kind of away, right? So I aim point of his shoulder, thinking I'm going to smoke him. And what does he do? Not a thing. Does not move one muscle the whole time. And my arrow goes past him. And then he kind of freaks out because my arrow like hits the ground right beside him. And he kicks up a bunch of stuff. Like, oh, did I hit him? And I like put my rangefinder up to look at him tighter and no blood, nothing. Just completely missed him. So they're like just very unpredictable with the way they're going to jump and stuff.
They are. That's the difficult thing. You know, we talked to a buddy of ours that, and he was a little hyperbolic, but he said he had bow hunted pronghorn for years and had like 20 misses. and hadn't killed one yet with a bow. And I think it was more like 10 when we kind of were like, really? And he was like, no, not 20, but like probably 10 or more. Mm-hmm. And I think that that gave me some confidence that, like, we're not just, you know, greenhorn jokes here. We are greenhorn, but, like, in the antelope game. But, you know, as far as shooting stuff and shooting deer and stuff, it, you know, we have some experience there.
We talked just to, like, people in town, too.
It's just wild, man, how fast they are and how they are the weirdest animal I've ever hunted, probably. They don't do hardly anything that makes sense. You can't, you know, we talked about, you talked about the me setting up on an exit route. Dude. There, I mean,
one of 30.
Yeah, I mean, literally, like, the thing is, with a whitetail, you could get on an exit route down by a creek, right? That deer might come running down the creek or down into the draw, right? He's probably not going to run across the top unless he's bad spooked or needs to get to the next draw. These things will just run around on the tops. They'll run in the bottoms. Mm-hmm. They'll run mid-level, whatever.
They'll go up a cliff face.
Yeah.
I mean, and not they cliff, but like a real steep thing that you think they're going to go around. No.
And they can see so well that they just don't really care where they run as long as they're running away from you, in a direction away from you, you know?
We talked to some people in town a little bit. They were also hunting. You know, it's like, it's antelope season for archery, you know? So everybody you see is hunting antelope, and that's it, because that's the only thing that's going on. And, you know, you'd be like, yeah, man, how'd your morning go? Oh, I messed it up at 80, missed. And it's like, okay, well, we're not the only ones that can't get close to these things, you know?
It gives you a little, it makes you feel a little better, because you feel like when you're out there, well, man, are we doing this right? Are we doing, or should we not even be doing this or that or whatever? And, you know, you worry about what people on video, on the video platforms are going to think about you. You know, you don't want to make a bad example of what, you know, you're trying to do. And then you realize in town and talking to some of your buddies on the phone that, like, have done it before, that you pretty much are just the status quo. You know what I mean? Like, you're doing what everybody else
has
done.
And that's what kind of hurts a little bit, is I like to fancy myself being an all right hunter, as a lot of us do, you know? And I'm definitely, like, average or below when it comes to antelope hunting, you know? So that's like, oh, that one kind of stings a little bit.
Oh,
so
it's a way to get humbled, man, real quick. And I think it's, you know, potentially bad and also potentially really good for you going into deer season, where
it hurts.
There's a couple of things. It's like the bad potential is like all of a sudden you don't have confidence and you're shooting, you're questioning every shot that you take at deer this year, even 20 yarders or whatever. And then the potential good is that you go, you know what? I'm not quite as good at this thing as I think I am, so I'm going to work hard to get better at it, right? And then that ends up getting you maybe closer shots in deer season, and you're more successful. So
I think that one of my things for sure I realize is that range makes a lot more difference the further away it is. Like, you can't think, and I've been this guy that thinks, like, oh, I can kill a whitetail 70 yards, not a big deal, you know? Well, the difference in 70 and 71 is probably like 4 or 5 inches. So, like, I'm not saying I'm going to take that shot, but it's like a facsimile of the concept that, man, if you got a whitetail at 38 and it takes a couple steps, like, it's probably worth, if you got the time, just go ahead and hit him again. Make sure it's on.
Remember a few years ago on some Texas public, I had a crazy cool day, but I ended up shooting, skinned the hair off of a deer. That came in behind a doe, and I had ranged a spot, but I ended up shooting him for I think he was like 40. I shot him for like 36. So there's like a 4 yard difference there. I probably, you know, here's the thing is, like,
I was sitting here trying to think about what deer.
No.
You killed that night.
I killed that night.
Yeah.
Yeah. But this one I didn't kill, and I was real sad.
Oh,
dude.
So sad.
But you think about this, like, if it's a 2-inch difference in 4 yards there or whatever, or 3-inch difference, and then say on top of that I shoot a little high, or I aim a little high or whatever, 2 or 3 inches, that's maybe 5 inches. That's the difference in, like, at least spining that deer and just taking the hair off of him. You know, so, I mean, it's the difference in finding a deer and killing that deer. And so it really, like what you're saying, even under 40 yards, like, it does, it's important, you know? And I think I probably was a little more worried about ranges back then, and still even that at that
What's
time.
What's funny is that, well, then you're shooting heavy arrows, but before that, you're shooting pretty light setups.
Yeah.
And the heavier your arrow is, this is definitely the drawback with antelope, is that the heavy arrow is not the way to go, right? And so you have to kind of judge your quarry by or judge your arrow setup by what quarry you're going to pursue. If you're shooting, you know, an arrow in the 400s for whitetail, it doesn't affect as much. If you're one of those heavy arrow type guys, the 2 yards makes a huge difference.
Yeah,
you know, and that's going to be the same thing with a like a recurve or whatever too. Mm-hmm. Like you're, it's a huge amount of difference when you're shooting a slow speed and a heavier arrow.
Yeah, and we did some like quick, just kind of redneck math on one of your longer shots. We were able to review the footage really well because mm-hmm. it was primo, you know. And we figured out that, like, if he'd have been shooting my arrow set up or that weight, right, that the arrow would have been, like, another – at that distance would have been 7 feet ahead. And
like, faster. Get to the target fast.
Yeah, it would have been – like,
like when you're watching sprinters going down a track – when the guy's beating another guy by 7 foot, that's what it would be like.
Yeah. So essentially when my arrow would be hitting, yours is still 7 feet back.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the difference maybe in a spine shot on mm-hmm. on a deer that you, or an antelope you take the hair off of or whatever, mm-hmm. you know? So it's just, I mean, obviously we could sit here and talk about this stuff over and over and over again. At the end of the day, man, God's going to, you know, will everything you want that he wants you to actually take off the earth. You know what I mean? So, I was looking at our buddy Hunter shot a deer in South Dakota. Really cool video that I was watching the other day, I think Monday. And, you know, when you look at where the arrow hits that deer, it was low. And I kind of wonder, I hadn't even talked to Hunter about this, but I kind of wonder if that deer was actually a little bit further than Hunter thought, because I think he shot his 30-yard pin.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a feeling he's a little bit further. And but it, because the deer was real amped up, he dropped really far. And then we all know, if you've watched it, you know that, like, we were not very sure about that.
Oh,
and
I did not think he killed him.
Yeah. And it was deader than a doorknob, dude. That thing died on video.
He's stiff.
You can hear him, you know. You can hear him crash. And so it was just, it's one of those deals where, like, and he was so thankful, you know, he'd been praying about it a lot. But it is one of those things, like, dude, you can mess it up, and sometimes it just works out for you.
That's right,
you know what
man.
I mean? So
that's true.
You try to do the best you can, and I do think I'm with you on this, man. Like, and I shot the lighter arrow setup. I think for antelope, it's the way to go. I mean, right here on what we were looking at on Wikipedia or Google or whatever earlier, it says that the average mass for a male adult pronghorn is 88 to 140 pounds.
Which is not a mass measurement,
so,
by the way.
So, that's a weight measurement.
Yeah.
So that being said,
the biggest ever is 140 pounds.
Yeah, the bigger ones
we were not shooting at the 140 pounders, right?
Yeah.
I mean, so, we're not shooting at the shacks of the antelope.
More than likely, you know.
We're probably shooting at like a 110-pound animal.
110, 120, maybe 130 if you had a monster, mm-hmm. which there were some nice ones around. But, I think that, like, that being said, a 430-grain arrow is going to do the job pretty mm-hmm. much everywhere you hit that thing, you know. So I think it is the way to go, man.
Oh, absolutely. You know? And I think that, too, I'm not going to probably change, but at least the thought kind of runs through my head of, like, do I really need 535? Or I would like to actually do the test the difference in 500 and 535, like that 500-grain spot.
For antelope?
No, just to see what the drop is,
yeah, okay,
or, like,
yeah.
the difference. In, you know, because before we left, I tested – and I ranged the target at 50 yards, took a step back to 51, and it was 3 inches. That's what I was getting, roundabout, you know. But so I wonder if you take the 35 grains off or whatever it is, if it tightens it up a little bit more.
It should be. Shouldn't there be like almost like an exponential factor where when you have a lighter arrow, you're shooting a faster arrow
mm-hmm.
out to a certain distance, maybe, because that lighter arrow will start to lose momentum, right?
It's way out there,
so,
though.
But it's pretty far. So, like, say at 50, you have a lighter arrow, so it's going faster, which is going to have a flatter trajectory,
mm-hmm.
and gravity's also working less at the same time, right? So, because...
Well, I think that the gravity's still what's playing in your first thing, too. Gravity's what's making it drop.
Yeah, but the speed also, right? So a slower speed would make...
Well, slower speed just gives gravity more time to work on it.
Okay.
So I think it's the same fact.
Okay.
But it is a good point that you're making. It's like if the arrow is in the air less time, then gravity has less time to work on it.
Mm.
It's just the way... That's why arrows fall, right?
Yeah.
That and drag, which drag is kind of pretty constant for most arrows. But yeah. I'm thinking about that for like whitetail or maybe elk especially, where, I mean, there's a lot of elk that are killed with 440, 450 grain arrows. Mm-hmm. Like a lot of, like, the elk hunters that we watch and know that kill a lot of them, they kill them with lighter mm-hmm. arrows. I've killed elk with a 430 grain arrow, and I've killed an elk with a 470 grain arrow. I've killed an elk with a
535.
Yeah. Yeah. So they'll all kill them.
Yeah.
But it's just like, to what lethality do you want to, well, I guess it's all lethality. The hard hitting aspect, how much do you care about that versus being accurate? Because at that thing's at 47 instead of 45.
Dude, I think, I mean, it's,
this
I,
is like,
you dude, have you to balance everything in
right.
life, man.
That's right.
Like life, it doesn't matter if you're talking about, you know, honestly, like you could, if you don't balance drinking alcohol, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like you're going to be in trouble. You're going to find yourself in trouble. You know what I mean? If you, and that's one, that's like a negative kind of context thing. If you don't balance, like say you're a little league baseball coach and you practice 5 days a week, if you don't balance that, yeah, I mean, you're not doing, I mean, you just, you can't just pour in like that, man. That's just too much, right? Everything has to have some sort of, there's going to be things that weigh a little heavier on each side, but you got to try to balance this stuff. And it's the same thing with this. It's like, man, at what point do I get the best results in accuracy that I maybe almost can't even shoot the difference in, like we talk about, versus like also having the momentum we need to get through these things, you know?
And I think that there's also the broader point of, you could just figure out a way to be a better hunter and get closer and not have to mess with it too much.
Yeah.
And I think with, you know, whitetail, we try to do that. I mean, I love taking 14-yard shots. Because it feels pretty good.
Dude, I made a target of 20 yesterday, and I was like, that's got to be like 14 yards.
That's, you know, right.
Like,
that's so like close, mouth, right? Man.
Yeah. Like, please give me a 20-yard shot this year.
And then, but antelope, I guess, is that. We can either figure out how to be more accurate, or we can figure out how to just get closer for more probable kills.
I'm not sure if I'm getting any closer, because my, I mean, who knows? My knee was not feeling good on this trip, and I don't know. I mean, it's, I just seen, I mean, so you tell me it could happen.
You
it
might
could happen.
Kill one with lead instead of steel next time.
Dude, give me all that. Give me all that, dude.
It would be fun to go shoot one with a gun. I mean, I know, and honestly, guys, I love it both. It's just there probably ain't another animal except for like a duck, right? But like, there ain't another furry animal that the rifle hunt versus the archery hunt is such a polar opposite.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you could just walk, or not probably ride around in the truck and pick which one you want to shoot.
Oh, for sure.
And just shoot him.
You're just hopping in the road ditch.
It'd
pretty
be fun.
Much, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know how legal that is, but like that's
well,
something that could be done.
If you're on the property,
well, yeah,
legal.
If you're on a two-track, yeah. I mean, yeah.
So, but with the bow, it's like, it's the hardest hunt I've ever done. Like I said,
yeah.
You know, so it's difficult. But that's pronghorn, man. It's
so
fun.
Are you going to change your setup this season? You're talking about maybe going a little bit lighter, 30 grains or so?
I've got the arrows to do it if I wanted to change my sight tape and stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean,
you're still going to shoot the SR350 all year, you think?
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
a fast bow, I guess.
I'll shoot the fast bow.
Yeah.
I think, man, I don't know. I think I'm just going to stick with what I got. But for antelope, I would change. And turkey, for sure, I'm going to change.
Yeah.
I'm
shooting a blowgun at turkey.
That's right. If we even have to shoot a bow at a turkey, sometimes
for
they make
real.
You. But otherwise, I'm shooting a gun. I like to make them die.
Me too.
I just, because the other animals we're hunting are mostly bigger bodied, I will probably continue shooting the bigger arrow. Because also, you get a little bit more flexibility. Like with a elk, I mean, you got vitals that are bigger than a 5-gallon bucket.
Right.
You know, like if you're off 3 inches on an elk, you still hit lung. It's a lung shot. Still, even if you were going to hit the lungs on the other spot, where antelope, if you're off 3 inches, it's the difference in the vitals and missing the animal. You know, so that's another huge part too. But you know, maybe for some of the like in December, I might look at, because we'll be, you know, mostly in the south then. I might think about switching to the 500 grain.
I'll be hunting some 120 pound deer.
That's right.
Big bucks that are 120.
Yeah.
I actually started shooting a new bow when I got home, or it's a bow that I've shot. So I actually shot a pig in June, I think it was. And I missed him high, right over the back. And I was, it was like 30 yards. I was super surprised, right? So then I go home, and the next day I get up and I shoot, and it's, my bow is shooting super low. And I'm like, and it's like, it's for sure off, right? And I'm just like, that doesn't make sense at all, dude. I'm like, this is dumb. Something's wrong with my bow for sure. But like, I thought tuning issue or what's going on. So anyway, I just like chunked it, started shooting that lighter arrow for the antelope. And I just practice with that bow setup. So I get done with that antelope hunt. I come home, like, I want to test this arrow out, or this setup up out again, because this is my 500 grain arrow that I shot last year that's going through this bow. So I was like, I'm gonna shoot this ladder through paper and try to see if it's tuned. Well, I shoot it twice. It seems pretty tuned for just a redneck tune job, right? And so I dish that, I go to 20, and I shoot, and it's shooting low. And I'm like, man, something's wrong with this. And I don't know why, but I looked at it. I don't really do this much, but like, I kind of grabbed the sight, and like, I just kind of like barely pulled on it, and it like slid the whole way down, like almost out of the sight, you know, vertical. And so I was like, oh, snap. So I moved it back up to about where I thought it was. I didn't have a good picture of where it was exactly, but I put it pretty close. And then I got the Allen wrenches out. It was that bolt that did the vertical up and down was loose, bad, like really loose. So now I know what happened. Anyway, I tighten that thing back up, kind of dial it in a few shots here and there, and get it close at 20, and work my way out to 40. And now, like, that thing is shooting, man. That bow is awesome. And it's a little bit slower bow, but at the end of the day, it shoots the arrows really accurately, really good. And when it comes to whitetail, I think I'm just gonna stay with that, man. I feel way more comfortable in the draw cycle and in the back wall. I hold that pin so much more steady than I do. You know, you talked about this. You shot a kind of a Matthews Ferrari for a while too, and those bows that shoot fast, I mean, if you can get them shooting, they're awesome. But sometimes, man, the littlest things can just make those bows like have a ton of torque or issues.
And that was a shorter axle to axle, which a lot of speed bows are shorter, and that really makes it bad. I mean, it's just like, you know, it's if you have like a stick that's real big, right? It's harder to make that thing move.
That's why you have a little balance stick, beam guys use, or the tightrope guys use a long stick.
It's inertia, pretty much.
Yeah exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So anyway, I think I'm just going to stay with that bow. You know, I really don't like the fact that, like, it's going to increase my pin gap a little bit, but it's shooting so well, and I'm just going to try to make 14-yard shots. Man,
I want to talk about pin gap. I know we're kind of getting close to the end of this thing, but there's a thing that I learned, too, and I've always kind of been like, oh, I like my bigger pin gap for the adjustable sight because I can actually see where the little marks are. Whenever you have a faster arrow setup, your marks are real close.
Oh, mine were super close in the
antelope. Well, guess what? That's a good thing.
Yeah.
That means that your marks are so tight that it doesn't matter if you're on 51 or 52.
Yeah.
Whereas if they're pretty far apart,
yeah,
it matters, makes a difference.
I know. It does.
I never thought about it that way until just recently. I'm like, oh, well, if they're tight, then that means it's not as imperative that you hit it right on the little button.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So mine were, I had basically a black line all the way down with that shooting 303 or whatever I was shooting, you know. But yeah, I that pin gap thing is a little bit bothersome because I know that there's that difference that when you get out to like, I shot at 80 the last 2 days, really, really good with that bow, like tiny groups, you know, and surprisingly. And I'm just like, man, I probably should stay with it, but it just does, like, when you get to 45 yards, if you're going to shoot a deer at 45 yards, say you're on the ground, and he ends up being, you know, 52 or 40 or whatever, it makes a difference, man. It kind of hurts to think about. But just maybe you just need to clear my mind and just know that, like, I'm going to do the best I can to get my ranges and make good shots.
It's a new hunt, man. Yep. One thing on that ranges thing, I think we can mess with our rangefinders. I was thinking about this, that a lot of times there's a setting, and in the hunt is not the time for me to do this. I just need to be focusing. But if we look, you probably have a, like, make it through the grass setting or a bounce off of whatever it hits setting. And we might be able to kind of mess with that for some of the ground hunt stuff.
I would love to have
the through the grass setting.
Through the grass setting.
Yeah. It's a thing.
Yeah.
Just oh, for sure. Kind of forgot about it until like day three.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, I ain't got time for this right now.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Anyways, yeah. Well, also, another thing that helps on that stuff too is to, if you have a pretty good range finder, you can just hold down the range button and scan, and it'll just keep and just do some circles.
I started using that when you told me that, because I was that night that I had him at 59. KC was like, you know, you can just hold that down, because I was just and I started shaking real bad because I was like, man, I'm freaking out. I can't get my range. It's like 16. I'm like, that thing is not 16 yards. But I started using that scan, and it was helpful to use. You know, so another thing about, you know, pin gap, getting close, and just having confidence. One way to get really close to deer this year is to listen to the Rut Fresh report, which is on the Wired to Hunt feed, or will be.
It might have its own feed too.
Okay,
where it is.
Oh, okay.
I don't know for sure.
So
we'll be seeing.
We did this last year for Mark on the Wired to Hunt podcast, but it's the Rut Fresh report. Every week, we give you a few different dudes from across the country that let you know in this state or this region or whatever, these whitetail are doing these kind of things, man. And you can expect this in the next week or so. It's a good way to stay up to date in case you're going on a trip, or you might want to go on a trip. Say you got some off time, you're a fireman next week, and or you're a fireman now, but you got off time next week. Maybe you want to go, you know, because the rut's hitting or whatever. So make sure we're going to make sure and report, or not report, but promote that for you whenever we figure out where it's going to be. Mm-hmm. But you want to make sure you're listening to that. It's going to be a good time. We're going to, Casey and I are going to host it, so you don't have to worry about Mark, you know, messing things up for you.
He says he wants to be on the first episode, and then we're going to we're gonna make him go away.
So y'all start about week two, you know. But no, it's going to be a good time. We're going to do that for basically September all the way through the end of the year, so you can hear us doing that kind of thing. And we'll make sure and get that all to you, the links or whatever you need if you want to follow that. Also, we're going to do a Q&A podcast again like we did. We put one out a couple weeks ago, but it was a couple months ago, I think, that we actually did this as a video Q&A podcast. So if you have a question and you send a video in to our email or our DMs on Instagram or whatever, however you can get just a vertical video of yourself going, hey, I'm just wondering about hunting scrapes on October 7th in this area. Am I going to see daylight, you know, daylight movement or whatever? And then you just send that video into us. We'll put you on our video. So if you're watching here on YouTube, like, it'll be like this, but we'll add you into the video. It's a pretty cool thing. Mm-hmm. And we'll answer all your questions. We love talking deer, and we love answering questions because it makes us think outside of the box too. So
Extra points if you send that to us on the X platform, which formerly known as Twitter.
Extra points.
That's right. If you send us your vertical video on that, there's a real good chance we use it.
Yeah.
So if you don't follow us over there on X, which is confusing, right? Literally, Tyler was texting me something about something on X last night, and I was like, what do you mean on X? And I know it's hunting an hour this year. What are you talking about?
I probably should keep calling it Twitter, maybe.
Dude,
but
I know. We were talking about it, and there's not a lot of intersection between Twitter users and OnX users, no. But we sit at that intersection, so it gets confusing for us.
Yeah.
But if you are on that platform, send us a message, follow us on there. It's a good spot to be. A lot of freedom over there, and if you like,
sure enough,
if you like kill shots, which we do, not exclusively, but we like them.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it's a big part of what we do.
If I don't see a kill shot on a video, I'm commenting on that.
That's right. It'd be better if you could see the kill shot. Tyler got a lot of that this past week.
Yeah,
that's pretty funny.
Listen, when you sell film, you don't get too many kill shots sometimes.
That's right. Tyler killed five deer and didn't get none of the kill shots on film that year. Just freaking killing them. That's all that matters. But it's good. Anyways, appreciate y'all following along. In the wrap-up, pretty much just don't hunt antelope with a bow. Just get your gun. And remember, this is your element.
Live in it.
You ever get that feeling, the walls closing in, the concrete jungle suffocating you? You crave some wide open spaces, the chance to connect with nature, maybe in a spot all your own. Well, head over to land.com. They've got ranches, forests, mountains, streams, you name it. Search by acreage. You can search by location. You can search by the kind of hunting and fishing you're dreaming of. Land.com. It is where the adventure begins. Hey everybody, listen up. I got mega huge news. Meat Eater Live is heading back out on the road. That's right. Join me and the crew. Clay Newcomb, Cal, Yanni, Spencer's going to be there. Phil the Engineer is going to be there. Meat Eater Live, head it back out. Now, when you get every ticket, okay, every ticket you buy, you get a signed copy of our new Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook. This tour is celebrating the release of the book. Buy a ticket, get a signed copy, Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook, wild game recipes for the grill, smoker, camp stove, and campfire, which I'll point out is a $38 value. Here's where we're going to go. April 23rd, the Mesa Arts Center in Mesa, Arizona. April 24th, the Balboa Theater in San Diego. April 25th, the Grove in Anaheim, California. April 27th, the Crest Theater in Sacramento. April 29, the Union in Salt Lake City. April 30, the Egyptian in Boise. May 1, the Wilma Theater in Missoula. May 2, the Bing Crosby Theater in Spokane, Washington. May 4, Revolution Hall in Portland, Oregon. And May 5, the last day of the tour, Pantages Theater in Tacoma, Washington. For tickets and more information, visit the events page at the Meat Eater.com. Hope to see you at the show.